Welcome to the Gooder Podcast. I'm your host, Diana Frank. As partner and CMO of Retail Voodoo, an award-winning branding agency, I have met and worked with some of the most amazing women in the naturals industry, food, beverage, wellness, even fitness. As such, I decided to create the Gooder Podcast to interview these great people and subject matter experts and have them share their insights, expertise, and to help businesses all around the world become gooder. I'm very excited today to introduce Miss Darcy Howard. Darcy is the Global Director of Marketing for Coconut Bliss, a brand leader in divinely creamy plant-based creations. She has 20 plus year success record in growing global brands such as Nordstrom, Eddie Bauer, Kerry Foods, Da Vinci Gourmet, and Starbucks. Darcy is an energetic leader that engages teams to create elegant solutions through strategic process development. She joined Coconut Bliss in 2017 to lead a complete rebrand while also spearheading the launch of two new product lines, a new business sector, and e-commerce. And when she's not eating ice cream for a living, she's exploring the world through food. Hi, Darcy. Thanks so much for joining me today. How's Oregon?
Oregon's good. Oregon's been hot. Eugene is this funny little bubble, both culturally and climate. It tends to get a little bit warmer, a little less rainy. Don't tell anybody. Okay. It's a hidden gem.
Yeah, I say that about Seattle too. It's always raining here. We never have good weather. Don't come. So you and I met a few years ago when you first joined Coconut Bliss team. I think they were still called Luna and Larry's Coconut Bliss, right?
Correct, they were. Yeah.
We've had some great conversations since then, but recently, and on the heels of a significant rebrand, something huge has happened with this Human Co. They're a mission-driven holding company that kind of acquires better for you brands in the food and beverage space. They've acquired a majority interest in Coconut Bliss. That's huge news. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's been a long journey of really exploring what are the options on how to get there, and was it the right decision for a family-owned company?
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to talk about that a little bit more, but what I like to do in the beginning before we kind of get into the meat of kind of the topic, I like to start with who you are. So tell us a little bit about your journey. You have a little bit different story than most people coming into the role at Coconut Bliss. You don't have that big CPG experience per se. So talk a little bit about how you got here and why did you end up at Coconut Bliss? What was it?
Well, you're right. I don't have that huge CPG experience, except for, during an acquisition where I was with Da Vinci Gourmet in Seattle and they got acquired by Kerry Foods, and then Seattle's Best Coffee, which got acquired by Starbucks. But I have this diverse background around sustainability, apparel. I lived in New York for 10 years. I worked in the fashion industry. I also worked for a advertising trade association doing marketing training programs for Fortune 500 companies. So I've got kind of this, unusual combination of things, which I actually think is sort of the perfect storm that really appealed to Coconut Bliss. And it's definitely kind of well-rounded my approach to brand strategy, which has always been at the core of what I do. Mm-hmm. For Coconut Bliss in particular, which is a fun story that we talked about, yeah. I knew that my husband and I were going to be leaving New York and moving back to the West Coast where our family is. And we really started looking at where we wanted to be. I'd been in Seattle for 20 years prior to that. I'd lived in Portland before. And I looked at Eugene, Oregon. And there are so many interesting CPG brands here doing some really innovative
really
work.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a strange place. I mean, do you know that there are no less than 4 ice cream brands based in Eugene?
Oh, they're based in Eugene.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? So as I looked at what was going on in Eugene and thinking about, when you leave New York, you don't want to go somewhere and try and recreate New York. You take what you've experienced and what you know, a lot of that energy and passion that you have, and you bring it to something new that you know that you can help and really contribute. So I was really looking for that, and I identified Coconut Bliss. Mm-hmm. They were making some big news in some of their growth. I had seen them on shelf before. Digging a little bit deeper, I found that they were really a mission-driven company, and they were based in Eugene, Oregon. So I reached out to them, and then continued to reach out to them, and continued to reach out to them. And we actually talked. It wasn't just a one-sided conversation. We actually talked over the course of 9 months while I was still in New York. And by the time I got here, we really kind of solidified the deal. They could obviously tell that I was committed to what I wanted to contribute to their brand. And it's been a great experience for both of us.
Well, now I know you, and this is just from our conversations, I know you as to be sort of this change maker. You like to be a catalyst within organizations, particularly like the Coconut Blisses of the world. Was that part of your, like, had you identified something kind of in your brain a little bit like, ooh, I think there might be something there that I could kind of help move? Was that part of the decision-making criteria?
Always the keen and perceptive one you are, Diana. Yes, as a matter of fact, that was. I looked at where they were in their brand life cycle and in their just general size. They were at that really pivotal point where they hadn't had a rebrand in many years. They'd been kind of operating as a smaller regional company that was trying to go national. And they were just prime for that next level growth. And that's what I really love is strategic is one of my top five Clifton strengths. And so I love to take a ridiculous amount of unconnected information and bring it together, find the common thread and create a strategy. And I saw where they were with everything that they were doing. And it was a little bit all over.
Yeah,
but I could see at the core who they were and what the potential was. And that is really what excited me about that brand. So hence the reason I continued to tap on their door about every 2 weeks. So I'd be like, hey, what's going on? Hey, congratulations on that award. Hey, did you see this article? I thought you might like it. I mean, it just went on and on. And I finally did say to them, hey, in case you haven't noticed, I'm not going to go away until you tell me to. And they said, no, we love hearing from you. And we definitely acknowledge that we really need a director of marketing. And we'd love to keep talking to you. So
that's
it was
fun.
Not in vain.
You got a little sales in you there, my friend.
Not the first time I've heard that, although sales is definitely not my bailiwick.
Well, so for the context of this conversation, you know, we're talking a little bit about taking a passion brand and driving it to high performance. And it kind of set us up a little bit about what Coconut Bliss had going for it. Maybe some of the things that, you know, maybe part of the history, enough context so that people can kind of go, okay, what were you working with as you came into the company?
Oh, I love the story. I'm so glad I get to tell it. So for those of you that are not familiar with Coconut Bliss, they started in about 2005. As you mentioned, Luna and Larry, they were two people that honestly, they were looking to create a vegan ice cream that was not made with soy. And they were just really passionate about this project. They got a used ice cream maker from Goodwill, like all great necessity entrepreneurs are. And they started playing around with coconut milk and agave, which really worked well with the fats in coconut milk. And they started creating these wonderful flavors and all these different little inclusions. And they lived in what's called an intentional community, which to maybe those of us from way back, that's basically a commune. And they would have these tasting parties and they would invite friends and neighbors over. And it got so popular that they started selling it, hand packing it and selling it to the local natural grocery stores and co-ops. And from there, again, continued to grow in popularity. They started distributing it up and down the West Coast, bought a freezer truck and they're still hand packing. And they continued to grow that until they got picked up by UNFI and KeHE for distribution. which are definitely more focused on natural foods and distribution. And then it got so big that they kind of looked at each other and went, okay, well, this started out as a fun passion project. Now it's getting a little bit bigger than we can handle. We probably should look for a co-packer. And that's when they reach out to the Gibson family that owns Lockmead Dairy here in Eugene. Actually, their production facilities in Junction City. And they reached out to them. And interestingly enough, Lockmead had been producing co-packing for So Delicious prior to them getting bought out. Yeah.
Okay.
So they had, they've been doing their own ice cream, their dairy ice cream, but they also had non-dairy experience and knew how to dedicate a line to be certified for vegan and non-dairy. So they started co-packing. They created a relationship, started co-packing. And then finally, Luna and Larry said, you know what, we'd like to sell. We'd like to sell this, move on, do some other projects. And they approached the Gibson family. Gibson family said, yes, we'd love to buy it. And so it's been owned by the Gibson family since 2010. And then again, continued to be just a really passionate, passionate team of individuals that were very committed to people first, to all organic ingredients, to a lot of things that other larger companies would look at and say, wow, that's really expensive. Maybe we cut out some of this, or not everything's organic, it would be cheaper. But there's absolutely no compromise in the product. And it really grew to a place that, to get to that next level. And again, that's where I got really excited and looked at them and said, ooh, you are so on that precipice.
Yeah.
I'd love to be part of taking this brand there. And so over the course of the last 3 years, we've really gone around about how to approach this and, you know, thoughtfully, very thoughtfully approached in who they decided to partner with on this equity stake.
That's, I think that's really powerful for, especially, you know, the Gibson family, right? Dairy farmers.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
To be able to understand how important this product was for people who could not, I mean, they don't, most of the people who are vegan, well, some people who are vegan because they have to for dietary reasons. Others, I call it for religious reasons. Like it is definitely a lifestyle. And for them to be able to honor the original, you know, Luna and Larry, the vision and keep tried and true to it, I think is a really fun story and pretty powerful too.
I would say that Kim Gibson is really a key part of that. She holds that same kind of value and has been very true to the original founders' wishes and their commitments.
Well, so let's move on here. So you're now in this role at Coconut Bliss, and you, as a change agent, as you know, change agent's role is to change things, and sometimes that can be tricky, because you're going to have to sometimes help people see some of the things that they didn't think need to change. Here you are, technically an outsider working with Fortune 100 brands. You brought into charter this new course. Tell us a little bit about some of the learnings that maybe you went through and they went through in order for you guys to be able to move forward. And some of this might have been through the brand rebrand process. But how much of this was, I think we talked a little bit earlier, like there was kind of some self-awareness that they already had coming into this change. But let's talk a little bit about the learnings that maybe you guys as a team had together.
Yeah, that's a really great question. Again, very perceptive, because this is a very, very special brand with people that are so dedicated. And I was coming in, here I am, coming in from New York, all full of, you know, energy and, or maybe even piss and vinegar. Like, I'm like, oh yeah, we're gonna shake things up. But honestly, that wasn't my goal initially, was to shake things up. Mm-hmm. I knew that this team and this brand would not tolerate that. They're very, very self-aware. And coming in, it was clear to me, even as we continue to have conversations prior to me coming on board, that that traditional CPG background, that big, you know, CPG background from, you know, ConAgra or someplace that's much larger holding company, that wasn't going to be their ilk. They weren't looking for that. They were looking for somebody that understood the sustainability and the people first and the commitment to organic, but was also just at the core, one of them, a passionate individual that, you know, has a tolerance for doing things maybe a little slower and focusing on doing it the right way. And that's definitely my approach to brand strategy, is we can go fast or we can go sustainably, do it right.
Yes.
You know, and I would rather see something that's going to have stickiness and stick around for a while than to just push something really hard through, you know, a square peg through a round hole. So that compassion was something that we both shared, and a delicate approach. There were also people that worked there that had been there for 11 years or 8 years. I mean, there were people that were there for a long time. So coming in and making sure that I'm appealing to what's important to them first before sort of dictating what's important to me or what I see is the possibility was really important. And it had a good impact overall. It's just a good way to create a strong team that sticks together.
You know what you're saying here is reminding me, I interviewed Jane Miller. She's CEO of Lily Sweets. And we talked about how to transition two different basically cultures together. And you're doing exactly what she recommended. And even so much as creating a courting process, which is somewhat what Jane did. She says, you know, you should probably have lots of conversations with these brand owners before you join, so that you already have a sense for what this team is ready for. And so you're kind of describing that already, and it's kind of exciting to kind of see that it works. I mean, yes, of course it works, but it's kind of great to see that experience.
Jane is so on the money about that. Getting a sense of what their tolerance level was going to be, and then mapping a course of how we were going to get there. She's spot on with that. And like I said, it makes a more sustainable transition for change.
So moving on now, you guys are working together, and was there anything interesting, or were there any learnings uncovered for you or the team as you were going through the brand process? Because now we're unpacking the baby now we're pulling things apart. Talk a little bit about that. And were there any hurdles in the way that you needed to kind of learn to get around, or that they needed to learn to get around?
I think that the sort of national voice, that the acumen and the voice, they had as being started out in a commune by people that were really looking to create a organic vegan ice cream. They'd been using a voice for 10 years that was, I would describe it as humble hippie. And as you know, you're getting into Kroger and even Whole Foods globally and expanding to Canada and Australia, that humble hippie approach didn't really translate on a national level and as a global brand. And but yet the core of the team was still a group of humble hippies. I mean, like we were slowly kind of moving into this bigger space, and being able to convince them in a very compassionate way, being able to convince them that humble hippie doesn't really speak to that larger, more aggressively seeking audience that's looking for this brand. It keeps you in the background. Yeah. But the fact that they had so many years of experience in creating organic, sustainable sourcing, and you know, a plant-based item, not to mention also certified, you know, vegan. If we could switch that tone to being more authoritative plant-based experts.
Yeah.
And bringing the team along with it to say, this speaks to this larger audience that we know is they're out there and they're looking for us. Where are they? Where are they? Where's the organic dairy-free ice cream? Where's the organic plant-based ice cream? And so they were looking for us, but we were not, we weren't speaking their language. We weren't talking in their tone. So really making that transition around a more authoritative tone and switching from that vegan to plant-based was, that was a big step.
Well, I would say in that 10-year time, because between 2010 and now, the naturals industry has shifted radically. We've gone from predominantly founder owners, smaller brands. We didn't have any multinationals. Now at this point, it's a macro trend. We've got plant-based is part of so many people's vocabulary. And so was there a little bit of that learning too, is that no, vegan is a small audience now, and actually the acceptance of plant-based or non-dairy is bigger, even with people who aren't organic are looking good. Was there some of that learning going on in there, kind of like new audience definitions and what's happening trend-wise?
Yes, there was. A big part of this was we did the first consumer insights study that the brand had ever done. And we also did a lot of A/B testing through social to get an idea of, okay, just who is looking for us. And it became very, very clear again that we were sort of speaking to the wrong audience. But to your point about plant-based, it's interesting because it keeps getting sort of referred to as a trend.
Yeah.
And I feel like a trend is more of, you define it more as a prevailing tendency or an inclination.
Okay.
And that feels a lot more like how we describe diets, like, you know, keto, or anybody remember Atkins, or even vegan. Those are chosen. Those are things that are definitely chosen. Some of them, to your point, more religious, philosophical, but I think that plant-based is something that is so inclusive.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want more plants?
Right.
How difficult is it to eat more plants? Not really. Not really. You know, so I don't view plant-based as much as of a trend, as a, as more just a broadened inclusive approach to eating. And yes, there are, you know, you look at Beyond Meat, or even Impossible Burger. I mean, you look at, there are companies that are definitely making a lot of money and gaining a lot of ground, but they're also helping to move that conversation forward. So I would have to say that it doesn't feel to me as much like a trend. And as we looked at it, that was one of the kind of aha moments that we had was, hey, wait a second. There's this thing over here called plant-based. And it goes more also into that, having that more global voice. We are inclusive. We are ice cream for everybody. You know, it's delicious. It's creamy. It is almost allergen. You know, it's very allergen friendly. Yeah, it's gluten free. It's, you know, organic. And so being more inclusive in our mindset versus the exclusivity, which is what vegan feels like. You know, when I say vegan to somebody who's vegan, they go, oh, that's all about eating nothing. You're like, or I can't eat anything. And you say plant-based and they're like, hey, plants, I can eat plants.
So when you're thinking about this transition that that you were helping, well, you were coaching Coconut Bliss through, really, is, and that's kind of, I'm seeing that as your role as more of a coach and a guide through this process. And then some of the work, looking back at some of the other brands that you've worked within, are you seeing any kind of learnings for these passion type brands that are like, hey, here's some things that you should be considering as you're kind of going about your day-to-day, not like there isn't tons of other things, but when you're thinking about the business in whole, and we're coming up that time of year where people are starting to do their planning for next year, what are kind of some of those learnings that you can pull from this process that you went through with Coconut Bliss that you could say, yeah, these are some things that I always suggest brands are keep their eye on?
I love that you asked that question, because working with a passion brand isn't for everybody. You know, they're, like I said, you can't just come in and be like, oh yeah, we're gonna shake things up. it's being a change, you can either choose to be a change agent or a disruptor. And I choose to be a change agent because I feel like change is hard for a lot of people. And unless it's something that you actually are comfortable with, and being an agent allows you to help shuttle or guide to your point through that process. Whereas a disruptor comes in, doesn't really care who gets disrupted, but just wants to make sure that things are getting, you know, upturned so that we can then create a new path. So to your point, for a passion brand, which I think is a lot of who you're speaking to, you know, what you're really reaching out to with your fabulous podcast, for a passion brand, having an understanding, and I know that this wasn't something that they had, is what their brand ethos was. Mm-hmm. They knew what they were comfortable with. They knew what they would and would not do. But defining that ethos so that you can then build those guardrails. And it makes it so much easier when you have that in place to be able to say, yes, this is us, or yes, we will do this. No, we won't do that. And when you start to understand that piece of, you know, laying down your brand guardrails so that you understand exactly what road you're on, where you're playing, it also makes it a lot easier to understand who's looking for you.
Yeah.
That was a really big, like I said, it was a really big aha moment for us, which was, wait, it's not just vegan hippies that are looking for us. It is, the other thing that we were able to do by, you know, applying that passion, but building those brand guardrails, was to create our personas. Healthy Glow Heather. She is the young woman who is single, goes to yoga, buys an acai bowl, and Instagrams it in a selfie. Yeah. Or Heather, you know, we've also got our allergy-free Ashley. She has kids. They, one or both of them, are navigating allergen restrictions. Yeah. And she's trying to invest for her family. Mm-hmm. And is willing to pay more to make sure that everybody gets what they need. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we developed these personas, which was great, because then we knew who we were talking to. Yes. We had our brand guardrails. We hadn't diminished the passion that was still there. And we were still able to speak to the vegan hippie, but everybody got to come along for the ride. And it broadened our audience. It improved our sense of reach. It dictated a little bit more how we were going to approach the rebrand, and it gave us a different viewpoint of our mission.
I love what you have to say, because so much of course, that I think the reason why you and I get along so well is so much of what you're doing with your team is so much of what we do, and it's so wonderful to hear another organization being able to go through that, like understanding this concept of, and I might say this a little bit differently, but, and maybe you, I don't know if you'll agree with me on this, but this concept of being afraid of losing who we've already marketed to because we don't know who's really looking for us. I think that is when you're looking for who's looking for us. It's like, you can't get your current audience to buy that much more product. The only way to grow is to find a new audience. And if there aren't any more people that look like your current audience, you need to redefine them. How do you redefine them? You look for them. You look for the people that are looking for you. Am I hearing that right? Is that sort of the thinking?
100%. Yes. I would agree that Retail Voodoo is a master at that, and a master at guiding their brands at that. So yes, that's exactly why. Why you and I get along so well, that and just general good taste.
And great glasses. Can I just?
Yes. Ditto.
Tell me now there's, so we've gone through we've brought this new person on board. We've gone through a rebrand, and right on the heels of that, I'm sure this Human Co conversation started, because these conversations don't happen overnight. Talk a little bit about what some learnings were there. Was there any other new ahas, or were there any other like, oh, hadn't considered this in our growth trajectory? Anything new?
Yeah, there was. There's a lot of learnings along the way. I mean, like I said, this has been in the works, not with Human Co, has been in the works for over a year.
Right.
But the decision to do this and how we were going to get there has been in the works for well over a year, probably closer to two.
Okay.
We definitely talked to some people, and during the valuation process, looking at, wow, our cost of goods are very high. How do we feel about that? How do we make ourselves look more profitable and more desirable in this process without giving up what it is that is at our core? So there was a lot of conversation around that. But I also feel that the rebrand and hiring a PR, our first PR agency, and growing our impressions and share of voice by 442% in 3 years, it got a lot of attention of people like Human Co that was looking to develop as a mission-based holding company. Mm-hmm. And so we captured their attention through the rebrand, but we also captured the attention of a lot of other investors, but also just the media in general, and then consumers.
Yeah.
You know, there's one thing in doing our first rebrand in 10 years, which I always like to say is in branding, it's like dog years. It's like 120.
Yeah, it's so a long time.
It's a long time to go without doing a brand refresh. And so it was enough to decide to do that. It was time to do that, to do the due diligence around the consumer insight study, the A/B testing, to understand who we were speaking to. It's enough to do that, but then it's kind of like, all right, when you show up at the party, then what? Like, here we are. Then what? Then you have to, follow it up with a lot of tactics and metrics to be able to sustain that and take your place on the shelf and, grow your overall brand presence, but also household penetration. And again, ice cream is, eat it once a day. I mean, there are some people that eat it more than once a day, but, we have one day part. We're ice cream. We're dessert.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes. But I think that it opens what we've done, how we've changed, how we talk about ourselves, our voice, who we're talking to, has opened us up to being able to work with Human Co to explore things like a new base or a new category, whether it be creamers or almond or something else. It's opened us up for that opportunity to grow our day part, but also to just grow our audience.
Mm-hmm. That's exciting.
Yeah, it's exciting. Yeah,
oh my
for
goodness.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, so we've learned a lot. Thank you so much about talking about these things. I want to kind of turn the conversation away sort of from Poke Up Nut List for a minute and kind of get your thoughts on what's happening in general with naturals. And what are you excited about, either in ingredients or frozen or desserts or something? It's kind of a big open-ended question.
Yeah. I got to say, well, gosh, there are a lot of things that are going to come out of this COVID-19 quarantine, like people doing things differently. I mean, I am just sort of guessing by the timeline that you started the Gooder podcast through this, because how do I connect with these people when I can't see them? How do I get this information out there about, other brands? So I think that we're seeing so much innovation, and it's times like these where innovation happens, and our e-com is up 35% because people are stuck at home, and alcohol and ice cream are kind of where people are finding their comfort, which, I'm glad we can be there for people as a comfort that they feel safe eating. But I'm also seeing other brands that I'm super excited about, like Hooray Foods.
Yeah.
They're making a vegan bacon that's just amazing. I mean, really cutting edge stuff. Yes, there are some other vegan bacons out there, but this one is, you know, it's a game changer. I'm super excited about them. I can't deny that I crush hard on Oatly. I love, you know, there's a couple of talks that I've seen like their creative director do that. I definitely crush pretty hard on them because they came out of the gate with that tone and that voice. It's hard to shift. It's hard to shift gears on your voice. Like we couldn't have gone from humble hippie to as bold as they are. We couldn't have gone quite that bold. But I love that they came out of the gate doing that. So in plant-based, those are definitely two that I am really enjoying watching what they're doing and how they're growing. And then I will, as an Oregon resident, I will say that Union Wine Company, I geek out on them a lot. Underwood wine in a can, like they were one of the first to really do that. And the way that they've branded it, mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, they're clever in how they, you know, and their experiential marketing that they do is pretty exciting.
Oh,
I'd be curious as to what some of the brands are that Retail Voodoo is working with, that if you can share anything that's exciting happening there in that space that I should be watching.
You know, the biggest area that we've actually spent a lot of time in this last year has been in the supplement space. And it was very funny. We spent a good part of last year in supplement brands. And then COVID hit, and all of a sudden, all of the learnings from what we were doing became even more relevant. So there's been some learning there, and then food tech is also, food tech is super tricky, because food tech and naturals don't naturally go hand in hand, and so we're watching that. We're working with, we've worked with a couple of brands where we're taking one product and turning it into something else, a la like how with plant-based brands, where we're now making bacon or we're making burgers. And so there's some other food tech that's happening. And without being able to tell too much, of course, what I can say is that innovation continues to be pushed. My personal mission outside of Retail Voodoo, because we love this food tech, is trying to figure out how to make all of these healthy foods attainable by people who don't fit the current profile for our naturals industry, which is upper middle class, predominantly Caucasian females. And like, how do we start taking all of this learning and experiences that we have and start creating products for people who are needing the products, and being able to educate, because we're such good educators. We're such good educators and we're so passionate about it. And I think, so that's my personal, and that's who the Retail Voodoo team is hunting for, are those people who are willing to go, I don't need to make 40% margin on a $7 unit product. I'm willing to develop some products for different consumer bases that are in their best interest. And I'm willing to make 10% margin on something that sells at $4. You know what I mean? Those are the brands that we're looking for. And there's not many of them, to be honest. So I might have to create something myself.
I've had that same thought. I love that is definitely a passion that we share. And I think a lot about with Coconut Bliss, because it's a dairy alternative. And in the Asian, Hispanic, and Black communities, there is a lot of dairy intolerance. And those are also some of those not typical natural consumers that I would love to be able to provide them this solution so that they can enjoy their life and understand what it means to to have something that doesn't make you feel sick.
Yeah. Well, and these are, some of these communities are people who don't get nutrition education to begin with. So they don't know that they feel crappy because of the food they're eating.
Yeah.
They don't have that education to even know. They just go, oh, I feel crappy. And that's the end of conversation. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there. Interesting fact, I don't know if I shared this with you before, that I learned from, now I can't remember the name of the organization, but this, that people of color have a higher incidence of food allergies and food intolerances by a wider margin than Caucasians do. So there's a lot of, when you think about our industry and you're like, and you have that information, you're kind of like, and all we're doing is targeting over here. We need to like, let's learn this. And then let's grow. Let's take our passion for food. Let's take our passion for innovation and now explore it out to other groups. And it's going to require a different kind of education and a different kind of listening to that for that consumer, because their needs and their definitions of healthy lifestyle are different. And I think once we can kind of key into that and go, oh, okay, not everybody thinks this way, we can start looking this way, then we can start making some really big strides towards those groups of people that need the help more than we do, quite frankly.
I agree. Yeah, that's one of the personas that we've been looking at that developing is a millennial Mateo. I mean, he's, you know, mixed race, he's lactose intolerant, he's urban, he's, you know, living an alternative lifestyle in some way that is really, food is important to him, but he's seeking those solutions and incorporating them into his decisions, but he's young and he's not necessarily making a ton of money. So, you know, he has to choose very wisely, and how can we help to not only educate, but meet him where he is.
And then the other thing that I'll say, I learned this about a woman that I interviewed recently. She's a Black woman. She said naturals is in the Black community doesn't necessarily mean anything because they grew up with naturals. Most of the time, these families, particularly if you come from lower income, not necessarily middle class or upper, but most of these people are growing up where their parents are either buying fast food or they're making the food from scratch. And so naturals for them is, of course, well, I've been eating greens my whole life. That is natural. So like, yeah, just like getting a clue and starting to go, okay, the education is not there because the word naturals means something different to them, et cetera, et cetera. So it's, I think there's a lot of opportunity there.
Yeah. There's a great voice on, she has like a really great voice. She's a Black vegan chef and personality, and she has a wonderful Instagram, Tabitha Brown. But if anybody is looking to kind of expand their view into how that, you know, people of color are looking at, you know, natural or vegan and how they're talking about it and approaching it to meet their needs and their culture, I would say that she's one of my favorites.
Oh, I love that. Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you are like, I really want to make sure to share this with this audience? Is there anything that we didn't cover that you're like, I really want to share this, it's important?
Gosh, that is a tough question. And I saw that you were going to ask me that question. I thought that I might be even more prepared than I am for it, but I'm not. I think that, I think if anything, I always love to just kind of check in with myself, with people like you, with other brands on, you know, where their passion lies and what is important to them, and that, and to remind ourselves in general that passion is so important, but sometimes it doesn't pay the bills. And yeah. So I love to hear and share just the ways that I continue to fuel my passion without missing the point, which is at the end of the day, you know, it's called CPG for a reason, consumer packaged goods, and how to connect, you know, passion with the consumer, but also meeting the consumer where they are. Not talking above them, not talking over them, not dismissing them, but finding ways to connect the passion of a brand, because so many brands are created. I mean, I think about like the E-Myth, you know, everybody's read the, every entrepreneur wannabe, or, you know, who is an entrepreneur has read the E-Myth. And that's the fact that you start out with this passion. I always think about the story in the E-Myth about the woman that makes pies. She makes the most amazing pies ever. She makes great pies. Everybody wants her pies. And I think about that with Coconut Bliss, best vegan ice cream out there. But how do you scale it? And at what point do you realize that your passion may not be a business unless you are attracting the right people to your brand or to your product or to your passion and linking it? And I think about, you know, times when I had my own business and that was the one thing that I missed. I, you know, partnering up with somebody that complements, and I feel like Retail Voodoo does a great job at that. You and David just so complement each other in the work that you do, but also your approach, your energy, and your methodology, and finding that sort of complement to your passion to continue to be a business and attract consumers is important.
Oh, that's very kind of you to say. I wonder, you know, as here I have a couple more minutes with you, I wonder if you, you know, kind of reaching back into your past, and I don't know how far back you want to reach into, but if you were to look back in time in the last, you know.
That can get sketchy. I'm old.
Well, you and me both, sister. That's what I'm saying.
But we're holding up well. It's all good.
Zoom does a nice job.
I know, right?
Tell me if there was one piece of advice that you could go back and go, gosh, Darcy, if you could just give yourself a break here or think of things this way, or what's that advice that you'd give yourself?
It's so funny that I think this is something that people always say. It's almost like a cliche, but oh my gosh, your gut, listening to your gut instinct. I think about the number of times that I walked away from a gut instinct only to have it more body parts, only have it bite me in the ass later. And it's, and I think about, you know, what we're going through with this acquisition right now. I mean, I will be perfectly honest and in all transparency, there, Humaco is a holding company.
Yeah.
It's not in a holding company's best interest to have one brand, you know, one brand having one director of marketing. Like, it's in their best interest. Like, the reason why holding companies are successful is because they have shared resources and they gain efficiencies.
Yes.
So as I look at how proud I am that we've gotten to this place where we have been able to do this and partner with somebody that has an aligned shared narrative like Humaco, I also realized that I'm probably working myself out of a job, and that's okay. There are other brands out there that need my special brand of crazy, that need my, you know, that need my compassionate approach to being a change agent. And that's fine. If you do your job really well as a change agent, you get to step back or walk away and be proud of what you've done and watch it continue to grow. So,
I know that feeling.
Yeah. Acquisitions are hard.
Yeah.
I've been through a lot of them because it's kind of what I do is help brands grow to the next level. Acquisitions are hard on everybody. But if you can approach it with the idea that, you know, we're going to get through this together and that you can be part of the solution versus feeling like a, you know, a jilted lover, it's okay. It's a good growth. It's a good way to approach growth.
Well, there's a little superpower with that you are able to guide these passion brands, not only through powerful performance, but then through an acquisition that's a special set of skills, because those can sometimes not complement each other. So that it just, you know, I would suggest to you, you might want to just consider that as a set of superpowers.
It goes in the category of special brand of crazy. It's part of my superpowers. Special brand. You know, you gotta be a little crazy to love helping guide a brand through acquisitions and possibly work yourself out of a job. You got to be a little crazy.
It's always a need for that, though.
It is. Yeah. It is.
Now, I wonder, this is my last question for you. I wonder if there is some sort of interesting, this is actually my favorite part of the whole interview, is what sort of interesting fact do you have about either Coconut Bliss or non-dairy desserts or manufacturing or some sort of like, ooh, I'm going to take this to my next girls' night. I'm going to share this story or fact.
Ooh, that's interesting. I mean, it's almost like asking the how the sausage is made, which is kind of
a little bit
from a vegan brand, but how the vegan sausage is made. let's see. What is my favorite factoid about our product? This is something that, you know, everybody has heard of the power of, you know, coconut oil and MCTs, but most people don't even know what that means. That means medium chain triglycerides. And this is an interesting fact that there's maybe 0.02% of the population that has any issue with eating coconut. Because it is technically not a tree nut. The FDA often wants us to categorize it as a tree nut, but it's actually not a tree nut. It is called a drupe.
Yes.
And a drupe is also like an avocado that has the same MCT, the good fats. So the avocado and the coconut are far closer in being cousins than anything else.
Than like a walnut and a coconut?
Yeah.
Wow, that's kind of cool.
So I like that. You can eat, I know a lot of athletes that eat Coconut Bliss as a recovery food because it gives them those medium chain triglycerides, that positive, that good fat.
Interesting. Well, see, now you've upped yourself to 2 day parts, just like that.
Right? You know, if you get a chance to go to the website and go to our recipe section, you'll be blown away. We've done some amazing things with our product. It's actually really fun to work with because when it melts, it doesn't get watery because it's not dairy. It doesn't have that separation.
Right.
It stays. So you can turn it into a whipped topping. We've made soup out of it. We made mole with it. Wow. I mean, it's just a really fun product to work with. So coconut fat's fun to work with.
I learned about the coconut thing when we were working with Hillary's Hillary's Eat Well, because we were talking about being allergen-free, not allergen-free. If we use coconut, are we technically, like, there was a lot of round robin. What does the FDA say versus what does the community say? It is a very complicated issue on just this one ingredient.
Yes, it is. Very diverse, very, very complicated. A little bit of mystery.
I love it. Tell us a little bit, but if people want to reach out to you for any reason, what's the best way for them to connect with you? Is LinkedIn the best way, or do you have Instagram?
LinkedIn is probably the best way. You know, I definitely, you know, I have Instagram, and it is filled with a lot of food. I love to eat. I love to cook. I am a hell of a good mixologist. So you'll see a lot of cocktails, but yes, you can also find me there. But LinkedIn is a great way to reach me. I try to be active on LinkedIn and post and share, but I definitely love to connect with people on LinkedIn. If there's anything that I can, you know, this is a difficult time for a lot of people. There's anything that I can do to support someone that is looking to, you know, grow their career or expand their experience in natural, just let me know.
Awesome. And that's D-A-R-C-E-Y for those of you that are tracking, that you need that E in there, otherwise it'll take you to somebody different.
Not yourself quite the special speller. So I have an extra vowel in my name, but yes, D-A-R-C-E-Y, last name is Howard, H-O-W-A-R-D.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so very much for your time today, Darcy. I hope you had a good time.
I had a blast. I always find time with you being just tremendously informative and exciting. So I really appreciate that you would ask me to be part of your gooder community.
This episode is sponsored by Retail Voodoo, a creative marketing firm specializing in growing, fixing, and reinventing brands in the food, beverage, wellness, and fitness industries. If your Naturals brand is in need of positioning, package design, or marketing activation, we're here to help. You can find more information at retail-voodoo.com. And so there you go. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. And if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to this channel and share with your network. Until next time, be well and do gooder.